It is Thursday, April 18th. This is the Christian Commute. I am your host, Seth Dunn, and it is a glorious, glorious, glorious day. Finally, my new cell phone has come from work. After months of just dropped coverage and dropped signals from my old beat-up Samsung Ultra 22, I'm sent it back to the company, and I have a pristine Ultra 23 that doesn't have a cracked screen that I presume will not just lose its signal driving down I-75. And now I don't have to carry two phones with me anymore. Because aside from the drop signal, which I could deal with, because who am I calling? And aside from the cracked screen, which I'm not sitting around watching TV on it. I cast it to the big screen. The microphone didn't work, and neither did the camera. So I couldn't QR code scan things, and I couldn't talk. I couldn't hit a button and say navigate somewhere. So because a microphone didn't work, I couldn't record the podcast. I lost an episode. Maybe two before I figured out what was going on. So I've been having to carry two phones. I have a phone, like my own personal phone, that I just keep for my house because I don't have a landline phone. I just have a cell phone. And when I left my old job and they took my phone away, like right then, they're like, all right, this is your last day. Give us your phone. I'm like, well, I guess I should have my own phone in case this ever happens again. So I have just my own personal phone that I just leave in the house. The kids can use it to call their friends and whatever. But I've been having to carry it with me, and I'm so sick of carrying two phones. So this is it. I've got the new phone. It doesn't have any battery in it right now. I got to take it home and charge it. But I've got the new phone, and I'm not going to have to carry two phones anymore because my microphone works. Now I'm going to be paranoid about dropping this one and cracking it because I saw the contract that came with it today, and it was 3 years. I had that other one for 2 years, and it was broken for 6 months, and I was just like, come on, April, get here. So that little first world problem is over for me. The computer, the powerful computer that I carry around in my pocket will no longer be malfunctioned. So I got another powerful computer that's poor African kids had to dig up the conflict minerals to get. So now over here in the first world, I'm doing just fine. I have a full show for you today. The show topic is A Billboard Too Far Part 2. Some of you probably saw A Billboard Too Far Part 1 come into the feed and then disappear. And I did that on purpose. I said, you know what? It's probably better that I release Part 1 and Part 2 at the same time. I haven't said all that I'm going to say, and I don't want to leave it on like a cliffhanger on a Tuesday. Plus, I have friends and neighbors and fellow churchgoers who are going to be upset about what happened, because whenever you have an organization that's large, you're not going to have 100% agreement on any decision, especially controversial ones. And I want, you know, let those people think through things themselves before I talk about it. Plus, you know, give me a couple days to mellow out even more. So, there's the day. So, I'll get to that, A Billboard Too Far Part 2. I have a question in the inbox. I don't even know how to say this question. About how we can communicate a biblical idea of love versus romantic love. I don't. Why would someone ask me this question? Well, somebody did, and there's two questions in the inbox. One is like a great question for me. I'm an accountant. Seth Dunn, accountant theologian. If I just had cards, if I was just some man about town, and I had business cards, it'd say Seth Dunn, comma, accountant theologian, because I'm a CPA and I have an MDiv. fun fact about me, I don't have business cards. I remember when I started at Field Turf, they gave me this big box of business cards. Seth Dunn, CPA, plant controller. I looked at these cards. I said, I will never use all these cards. I'll be gone from here before half of these cards get used. Because who hands out business cards anymore? Plus, as a controller, I didn't really meet people from outside of the organization. And we're in the digital age, so I don't want to use these cards. And then, was it 5 years later, I had to get new cards because I added responsibilities to my job, so I was plant controller and a purchasing manager. Or I did not like purchasing manager. I was like, I want to be the manager of purchasing. I had just my little Dwight Schrute problem with the title. I don't want an adverb in my title. I want manager of purchasing, not purchasing manager. Is purchasing an adverb? Lolly, 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 get your adverbs here. It doesn't end in lolly. And I said, I'll never use those. I'll never use them all. I didn't intend to quit. I was like, I'll die here at Field Turf. This is as high as I'm going to go in life. But I changed jobs, and I didn't even ask for business cards here. I don't have business cards. I don't have a phone. I just went to my buddy's office because he needed help with a spreadsheet. That's not my job title. My job title is Director of Financial Planning and Analytics, which is boring and nobody knows what it means. But if you're like, what do you really do? If somebody needs help with a spreadsheet, they call me. And I went to his office and his phone rang and it startled me. I was like, what is that? It's a phone. Because I don't even have a phone. Of course, I have a cell phone. I don't have a phone on my desk. I don't have business cards. I don't even go to the office half the time. I could disappear and no one would know. Until some report I made stopped working. Because, you know, I'm not out in the factory making carpet. If the people who actually make the carpet disappear, that's a problem. But I've no phone and no business cards. Off the grid. Do I even exist? That's an existential question. I don't even know how I got down that rabbit trail. I started talking, my friend called me and wanted help with a spreadsheet. Have no idea what that has to do with the question somebody asked me about communicate. Has something to do with business cards? Oh, yeah. Now that I'm 41 years old, I have to talk myself back to where I was. Accountant theologian. I have a question in the inbox about the Christian obligation to repay PPP loans from COVID. I'll get to that, Lord willing, tomorrow. But this is this question, and I'll get to it after the Bible chapter review. Luke chapter 1, verses 34 through 35. I almost went all the way to the end of the pericope with Mary, but I didn't have enough room on my sticky note, and I cut back two verses. So we'll finish with Mary's pericope here, with the angel talking to Mary, probably tomorrow. Luke chapter 1, verses 34 through 35. You know what? In the interest of safety. Sorry. Let me get over to the left lane. Let me get my cruising speed in my cruising lane, because I don't want to glance down in the right lane and then die by a fiery tractor trailer death. Mary said to the angel, "How can this be, since I am a virgin?" The angel answered and said to her, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. And for that reason, the Holy Child shall be called the Son of God." Because the angel has just told Mary she's going to bear a son. He's going to be the Son of the Most High. He's going to have the throne of David. He's going to be over the kingdom of Jacob, and his kingdom shall have no end. Or the house of Jacob and his kingdom shall have no end. I'm sorry, I'm having technical difficulties with my headset. It's wearing out. It keeps wanting to fall down from my mouth. And you notice the angel doesn't get mad at her. Remember, Gabriel got mad at Zacharias. Zacharias is like, "How do I know these things will be?" And Gabriel said, "You're going to be mute until it happens. I'm Gabriel who stands in the presence of God, and I've come down here to tell you this good news." He is mad because Zacharias doubted him or wanted some kind of confirmation. And Mary asks, how can this be? And some people wonder, like, why didn't he get mad at her? Mary's not being faithless here. She's trying to understand how this is going to work. Because she's a virgin. She's never had sex with a man before. And how in the world is she going to get pregnant? She just doesn't get it. You got to imagine, like most women who are born ever, they think, oh, I'm going to be a mom one day. It's just an expectation of having a child. But here's this woman, she's engaged and she's a virgin. She's not going to get married to her husband for a while. So how am I going to bear a child? I've never known a man. How can this be since I'm a virgin? This is not saying, I don't believe this. How do I know this is going to be true? It's more like, I don't get it. Explain it to me. She's confused. And we'd be confused too. Like, what if we were reading this and like, well, this woman's a virgin. Well, wait a minute. She's going to bear a child. She's not married yet. If this part wasn't in the scripture, we would think that the child is the child of Joseph. Well, she's going to get married to this guy and the child must be his. No, this is what's being explained to us. This is a miracle. A virgin is going to give birth. This is a bigger deal than a barren woman giving birth. Whether it be Sarah or whether it be Elizabeth, John the Baptist's mother, these barren women who were previously unable to give birth. This is a virgin. Nobody's even tried to get her pregnant yet. This is a virgin giving birth. Big deal. God is literally the father of this baby because it says the power of the Most High will overshadow you and the Holy Child shall be called the Son of God. Listen, everybody has to have a mother and everybody has to have a father. Okay? Jesus is not a clone. And by the way, if you clone somebody, I'm not sure if we can clone people yet. It's probably illegal. Maybe in China they're cloning people somewhere. I don't know why China would clone people. They got too many people as it is. But if you clone somebody, you'd say, well, this clone doesn't have a mother and a father. You'd say, yeah, but you cloned them from this guy over here, and that guy has a mother and father. Okay? Everybody's got to have a mother and father. Mary gestates the baby, gives birth to the baby. She's Jesus' mother. But the father is God. God is the one who causes her to get pregnant. And he does not literally come down and have sex with her, by the way. I think some Mormons believe that. That's not what happened. It says the power of the Most High will overshadow you. It doesn't mean that God made a body for himself or incarnated himself, God the Father incarnated himself to come down and get Mary pregnant. That's crazy talk. But here, Jesus is the Son of God. He does not have an earthly father. God is his Father. And him being the firstborn of all creation gives him the authority that God the Father has. And if you have the same authority as God the Father, doesn't that make you God too? Now don't get confused, because see, Seth, it's like the magisterium of they have the authority equal to God because God gave them the authority. No. The church has authority that Jesus has given it, yes. What you bind on earth will be bound on heaven. What you bind on earth will be bound on heaven. What you loose on earth will be loosed on heaven. But when Jesus says, all power is given to me on heaven and earth, that he's the only one who has that. It was given to him by God the Father because he's God too. And this is early in the New Testament. So to flesh out the doctrine of the Trinity, get that flesh out because there's an incarnation. To flesh out the doctrine of the Trinity, we would of course need more scripture. But undeniably, Jesus' birth is divine. He doesn't have a human father. He's the Son of God. He is God. All right. We'll end the Bible chapter review right there, and we will move on to the inbox. If you have a question about Christian theology or apologetics, you can call SethDunn88. No, you can't call that. That's an email address. You can email SethDunn88@gmail.com. SethDunn88@gmail.com. Or you can dial 470-315-0875. The Christian Commute is your theological roadside assistance. This question comes from the phone line. It's Jeff. I remember when Jeff called, I was sitting at my table eating cereal, I think. I was like, oh, there's Jeff. And I listened to the call, but I didn't answer it because I couldn't talk because I was eating cereal. He says, Seth, how can you approach someone, especially a female, when it comes down to overly romanticizing the idea of marriage? And he gives this example of a friend he has who watches a lot of rom-coms, reads a lot of romance novels, and listens to a lot of country music. And she's got this very romantic idea of marriage. And he's like, how do you communicate to somebody that it ain't all sunshine and rainbows? I think that, as Don Henley would say, after the thrill is gone. Don't the Eagles, after the thrill is gone, don't the Eagles sing that? Is that considered country music? He's like, how do you disabuse someone of the notion that it's just not all romantic, that there's more to marital love than just romance? And he says, especially to a woman. Let me tell you something, John. If I knew how to communicate stuff to women, I would have already sold a book telling everybody how to do it, and I would not be on this rinky-dink podcast in a 2010 Kia Soul driving up and down I-75. I would be in my private jet going to a conference where everybody wanted to listen to me because I had figured out how to communicate ideas about love in general that are not romantic to women. I don't like to criticize my beloved listeners, but somebody sat around one of my listeners I know. Let's ask that autistic accountant with a management information systems degree who is basically a robot with blood and skin how we're going to communicate to women. Okay, let's do that. But hey, you asked, so I'm going to try. Why is he asking this, guys? Because it's like I was talking about the other day, marriage, especially in biblical times, is not all about the feelsies. Marriage is a commitment more akin to a contract that two parties enter into for their mutual benefit. And by the way, that's why anybody enters into a contract, for the mutual benefit of the parties. And marriage is sort of this weird contract, this covenantal contract, I should say, in that the two become one. Because when you have any other kind of contract, it's like, well, I'm going to sell you this widget for $100. And then, ha-ha, it costs me $50. I'm going to make $50. And the other person's like, well, I'd like to pay less for the widget, but I got to let him make his money. But I'm going to make him guarantee his widget for 10 years, because then I got to use the widget in my manufacturing process. So there's this negotiation in contracts. Marriage is not like that. All of a sudden, the two become one flesh. And the woman submits to the man as unto the Lord, and the man loves his woman as Christ loves the church, ideally. That's not just God's design for Christian marriage. That's God's design for all marriage. But of course, everybody's not a Christian, and that starts to look bad in some cases. And some people are just more romantic than others, and they think everything is, I'm going to get married and I'm going to feel like this newness and excitement forever. And then, man, things get hard, money gets tight, stuff around the house needs fixing, the dishes pile up, kids get loud, you get more kids and it gets louder. You don't see each other as much. People pursue their own interests. And maybe the wife is not interested in what the husband is interested in. People grow apart. You know, there's this, you know, when you're about to have babies, you're losing your mind. And then your mind comes back to you 5 years later. And you're not really, I'm not going to have any more babies. What are you going to do now? After the thrill is gone. There's an, a BB, the thrill is gone, this BB King. Thrill is gone, we. And how do you communicate to people that it ain't about the thrill, man? And it's sort of the same thing when people first get saved and they get so excited, especially, you know, if they're false converts like the Rocky Ground people. And he gets to be like, well, you know, I got saved 30 years ago. I'm not, it's not, there's no newness that's not there anymore. It's still this miracle. There's still this love God has for me, but there's, it's the change happened so long ago, you almost forget what it's like before you were changed. And when you're a Christian man or woman going into marriage, you're going into that, and the tie that binds you together is God. And you and your wife together, or your spouse together, are under His lordship in your marriage. And no matter what happens, you have an obligation to keep on forgiving one another and staying with one another, because God hates divorce. And then you have to get together and demonstrate Christian love in front of your kids, even when it's hard. And Jeff is asking, how do I tell somebody this and communicate this idealistic person who watches rom-coms, reads romance novels, and watches country music? Maybe you don't have to, Jeff. I don't have a Bible answer for this. I can tell you what the Bible says what marriage is. This is what marriage is. This is what agape love is. The eros love word's not even in the Bible as a Greek word. Doesn't mean that eros concept isn't there. But there's a duty and formality to real Christian love that doesn't always come with the feelsies. And I think the best way to communicate that is just with the Bible. And you say, listen, I want you to think about the biblical culture. People were getting married and they weren't in love with one another yet. They didn't have the feelsies about one another yet. You know what they did? They developed the feelsies over time because they lived together for so long and were partners for so long and appreciated one another. And how much greater is that appreciation under the lordship of Christ? I think finally at the end of Family Matters, don't Urkel and Laura finally get married? But Laura wasn't interested in Urkel at first. Yeah, that's where I went there. I went to Steve Urkel and Laura Winslow. And by the way, don't sell the rom-com short, Jeff. I have suffered through enough rom-coms to understand the plot, the cookie-cutter tropish plot. In a rom-com, you have people who they seem like they're star-crossed and they're not going to get together, but they do. But then some calamity happens, usually some misunderstanding that's later sorted out by their perennially single or homosexual stock character friend. And then they get over the thing that has kept them apart and they reconcile at the end. So even rom-coms are not without conflict when the people fall in love. And the same goes for country music. I've been begging for you to forgive me, but it seems like you can't even start. And I feel like a stone that you picked up and thrown to the hard rock bottom of your heart. Well, Randy Travis is at the hard rock bottom of the heart. Oh, and Randy Travis is out there tempted. On the other hand, there's a golden band that reminds me of someone who would not understand. On one hand, I could stay and be your loving man, but the reason I must go is on the other hand. Randy Travis songs are mostly, I would think, you go to Randy Travis, you hear a wedding. You go to a wedding and you hear Randy Travis and you hear, I'm gonna love you forever. Forever and ever, amen. As long as old men sit and talk about the weather. As long as old women sit and talk about old men. And then they play Deeper Than the Holler. My love is deeper than the holler. Longer than the river. Higher than the pine trees growing tall upon the hill. My love is purer than the snowflake that falls in late December. And honest as a robin on a springtime windowsill. Longer than the call of a whippoorwill. And oh, look, we're all the happy. We got Randy Travis happy stuff. But then you got, on the other hand, then you got Hard Rock Bottom of Your Heart. And then there's, what's the other one? Like that pretty negligee that I bought you to wear. Digging Up Bones. I've been sitting alone, digging up bones. And then there's Randy Travis getting left. He's like, time is, you know, it's not time is on my side. He's like, I told you so. Oh, I told you so. Listen, country music runs the gamut. And now that I hope some of you probably keep fast forwarding, but I think Jeff mentioned country music because he knew I would sing a bunch of country music songs over that and it would amuse him. Another one. Country music song, somewhere other than the night. She needs to hear I love you. Somewhere other than the night. She needs to know he cares. You know the song where the farmer is mad because it rained and he has to come in from the rain and he's like upset that his work day is wasted, but his wife has been waiting for the rain all day so she can spend some time with him. I don't know, Jeff. Maybe let the young, naive woman be young and naive, but give her the biblical, you know, explanation. And that's how you communicate it. Just, hey, yo. And I like to start sentences with, hey, yo. Hey, yo. Do you think marriage is about romance? Or do you think marriage is really, really hard? How y'all like that Scott Hall reference? He had a mind for the business. Anyway, Jeff, that's this what I would do is I would just point out to that culture at the time, just Mary and Joseph, great example. Mary and Joseph were super obedient to God. Mary found favor with God. She said, let it be done according as you say. Joseph was going to quietly divorce her, be a nice guy, not embarrass her. But then he married her anyway because the angel told him to. He raised a baby that wasn't even his. They showed faith. They had a family together after Jesus. These are people who didn't date and have the feelsies. These are people their culture would have put them together. It doesn't say if they knew one another or thought one another were attractive. But that's how marriage was back then. And the expectation now is the same way as the expectation was back then. And get this. We get married because we get the feelsies. These people didn't even have the feelsies for one another, and they were still expected to do the hard work of submission and dying for submission to the husband and dying for the wife. I just frame it that way, Jeff. And lean hard. I hope she listens to good country music. Because I don't listen to this new bubblegum pop country music of some guy with two earrings and a cowboy hat who sounds like a rapper. I don't, maybe that country music is all about romance. Is Taylor Swift country? I don't even know. Or what, Carrie Underwood? I don't even know. I mean, golly, listen to Patsy Cline and see if you don't cry yourself to sleep. You don't love me, it's plain. He stopped loving her today. There's the other end of it. All right. I'm going to cut out the country music. I'm done. I answered that question as best I could. Thanks, Jeff, for making the show 10 minutes longer. All right, now let's go to a Billboard Too Far Part 2. So yesterday, long story short, I told you that after 5 years of attending First Baptist Church of Cartersville, two of the elders, speaking for the rest of the elders, told me not to come back. Because they don't like, I mean, let's face it. There's a bunch of people who don't like me, and they've heard complaints about me for 5 years. But the specific thing, like if I'm in First Baptist Jail and there's a crime I'm accused of, it's whycrosspoint.com putting up that billboard and making that website, okay? Because they think, to be fair to them, they think I'm attacking a sister church. And I think, no, I'm not. That's just a concert business with a coffee bar and a rock show, and it doesn't have biblical church music, and those people are being manipulated, and they are not properly recognizing the ordinances. And where you guys been? I've been talking about this for 5 years. I think since before I started going to First Baptist, I've been talking about how bad Crosspoint is. I'm a busy man. I just got around to the website. So off I go. All right, and I've told my kids it is tearing up my daughters because they're upset. And you know what? I knew that was I didn't know I'd get kicked out because of that. But I named my son Athanasius for a reason. If you stand up for God, you got to make sure your kids know that there's going to be a price to pay. And even if you're wrong, if you just stand up and do according to your conscience, because Martin Luther said, I can't go against my conscience. I can't do it. So yeah, what is John Proctor in the Crucible? It is my name because it is my name. Leave me my name. There's something I can't turn off that website because I think it's the right thing to do. Now, I'm not like John Proctor about to get hung by the Puritans on a witch hunt trial. I'm certainly not like Martin Luther and the Catholics are trying to kill me while I start a Reformation. I'm trying to do what's right in my town. For my neighbors, because I love my neighbors. There are people at Cross Point that I care about. What's that guy, Zelensky? I'm an American working man, because I make parts for the American working man, because that's who I am, and that's who I care about. I make billboards and websites for the Christians of Cartersville, because that's who I am, and that's who I care about, and you can like it or not. Okay? But anyway, they told me not to come back. At least they bought me some flounder first at Moore's Market. Oh my gosh. If you're in Cartersville, get out of Cross Point and go get the flounder at Moore's Market. It's delicious. So it's a nice lunch. Okay. And I'm this guy, I'm like, you don't have to call. If you want to kick me out of church, you don't have to take me to lunch. Just tell me. Just kick me out. Anyway, so I asked the question yesterday, what reason would a church have, any church USA have, for telling somebody who's not a member, don't ever come back? Can we think together of a reason for doing that? And Jeff wrote in when he heard, and I have to agree with Jeff, when you tell somebody that, you're basically saying, you're as bad as somebody dealing drugs in the parking lot or beating up old ladies in the lobby. So the reason that I would tell somebody who's not a member of my church to never ever come back for Sunday school or to take their kids to Sunday school or attend the worship service, and I don't attend the worship service because of the music they play, but the reason I would say don't come back is that person is violent, that they pose a physical threat. I think everybody can agree on that. That's just common sense. If you're a shepherd and you're an overseer, you want to protect people physically. If somebody poses a physical threat of violence, you would not ask that person. You would tell that person to stay away. You'd get a restraining order. You'd go that. If you think somebody is physically violent, you go far to protect people. Okay? I don't have a Bible verse on that. That's just common sense. But generally speaking, if you're an overseer and you think somebody's a threat like that, yeah, if somebody's doing something illegal on the property, tell them not to come back. All right? And you got to remember who the overseers of First Baptist are in my situation. They're the people in charge of caring for the members of First Baptist Church. They're not in the care of my soul. I'm not a member there. And just to be frank, I wouldn't want those men in the care of my soul because I don't think they're good at it. And That's not me coming out later and complaining. That's the implication of me going to your church for 5 years and never joining. I don't think you guys know your right from your left there. As a whole, there may be individuals who know to do the right thing. So one of them or some of them might say, it's not healthy for Seth to not be under the spiritual care of an overseer in his town. To that person, I'd say, I'm very happy with the pastor situation I have of the church where I am a member, even though it's in another town, because I trust that guy's opinion more than yours, and I trust that guy's biblical fidelity more than yours. And he's not perfect, and that church isn't perfect because no church is, but I've never wanted you over the care of my soul. So if you think this is the best thing for my soul, fine. But that's not your job as an overseer. Your job as an overseer is to do what's best for your people and your church. Okay? And to tell somebody they can't come, they would have to pose a physical threat or be disruptive in some way. Like, when they sang Hillsong, I would have to march down there and point at the guy with the guitar and say, stop, stop it. I might do that if I was a member, but I'm not going to do that as a guest. The first time I was there and they turned the haze machine on, I don't think I've ever told this story on the podcast before, but I've told Brother Kyle this. I was there at the second service, and at that time my children went to second service Sunday school. And I showed up, I was there, and for whatever reason, I wasn't in my Sunday school class, which happens at the second hour, and I forget what it was now, but I wasn't. They may have been doing a book I didn't like. Yeah. For those of you who are like, Seth, why do you go to the old person Sunday school class? Well, because they didn't use Lifeway. By the way, First Baptist doesn't do Lifeway anymore. They do Answers in Genesis, and everyone does the same curriculum. But the Sunday school class I went to, it was older adults, people my parents' age and even older. It wasn't like my niche. You know, they have the 40-30-year-old class. But I went to the class that didn't do Lifeway. So they do books of the Bible or other various books. But there was one time they did a book. I just wasn't interested in it. I think it was Gentle and Lowly, and I was like, I don't want to read this book, and I don't want to go do this a review of this book in Sunday school, so I'm just going to go to the service. This was a long time ago. And I was in the service, and the pastor was closing, and he started talking about the importance of bringing your children to the worship service, not just handing them off to the kids' ministry. And I remembered how beneficial it was in my own development as a child, as a young Christian, as young as six, to be in big church. And I was like, you know what? All I have to do is wake up an hour earlier to get them here. And I haven't been doing it. And I felt convicted, and I felt like the next Sunday, I'm going to get up and I'm going to bring my kids to the early worship service so they can go to hear the preaching as well as go to Sunday school. At that time, they had kids worship, and you guys know my opinion at kids worship at any church, USA. I'm not for it. So I wouldn't take them to that. And I was like, he's right. The preacher has convicted me. I have fallen short in this area, and I need to do better. And that's his job when he's preaching, right? To proclaim the word of God to us, to convict us where we're falling short, so that we'll be driven to a decision to do better. That's textbook preaching. This is what you need to go. I'm going to put you at a decision point for what you need to do if you need to do it. So here came invitation time, and they turned on that haze machine. And I'd never seen the haze machine before. And such anger welled up inside me. And I said to myself, if my children were here, I would have to remove them from the room during invitation time and explain to them later that the church was doing something bad by filling the room full of haze for atmosphere during invitation time. And I was like, how dare you want me to expose my precious children who are trying to grow in the Lord to this? You do such a good job in Sunday school, but this is what you want me to bring them to in worship? And I was just furious. And I was sitting pretty much near the front row because I was, quite frankly, I wasn't very early getting there. So when you get there late to church, you got to go all the way around from the right side to the left and find the empty chairs, which are usually front row left. And that's where I was sitting. And, I mean, I was just almost seething. And I was zeroed in on the... And I made sure, like, nobody was coming down to get saved. And I was like, I'm going to go tell him exactly what I'm furious about. No way I'd put my children in this haze machine. And then something came over me and I stopped. And it's like, whoa, hold on, Seth. This is just a guy hired to do a job by the personnel committee. This is not even necessarily what Kyle wants. This is what the church wants. I bet Kyle didn't buy that haze machine. Kyle didn't say order a haze machine. Like, this is a Baptist church. The people appointed leadership of this church because this is what they want. And going and cutting a promo on Kyle, no matter how righteously indignant, is not going to fix anything, and it's not even my place because I'm not a member, and this is one of the reasons, Seth, that you're not a member. Stuff like this. And I just calmed down and said, I'm not going back until they get rid of that haze machine. And I think it took a year for them to get rid of it. Somebody finally told me, you know, the haze machine's gone. I said, oh, I think, all right, I might go sit and worship again. Worship. The worship service. You can't see my air quotes. When you sing Hillsong and have a haze machine, you get scare quotes over your worship service. Not them, not just them, anybody. Anybody. And, but that the point I was going there is like, if somebody was causing physical disruptions, if somebody was just confrontational, either disrupting the worship service or being confrontational with the people there, I'd say, all right, you can't come here. And I think we could all agree on that. Because this is from a Baptist perspective now. Whether somebody is a professed Christian or not, from a Baptist perspective, from a local church perspective, we say, well, unless you're a member of this church, we don't really formally recognize your salvation. Maybe you are, maybe you aren't, and we may let you partake in the Lord's table with us, but we may close it off from you because this is only for Christians. So there's really no formal recognition of somebody's salvation. Now, if you went and polled people who knew me, and they'd be like, yeah, he's probably saved. He's a little weird. He does some crazy stuff. He has some issues. But yeah, he's probably saved. But there's really no formal recognition of my salvation by any church of which I'm not a member. When you apply to seminary, they expect you to be saved. And how do they verify that? One, you say you are. And two, friends endorse you. And three, ultimately a church has to formally endorse you. Say, yeah, this guy's saved. So you just take a situation of somebody like me and you say, here is a man who's not a member of our church, but he's willing to come and he wants to go to Sunday school and he wants to hear God's word. And better than that, he'll bring his children who needs to be evangelized in Sunday school. And guys, we all know that's the entire strategy, right, wrong, or indifferent, of church growth for youth programs. People know there are parents who don't go to church, but they said, hey, bring them to VBS. Get them in here. Bring them to our Wednesday night. We went to the Easter egg hunt at Pine Grove recently. And Pine Grove always does, I always like to say this, such nice little parties for the community. And we went to that, and the guy, to start the party off, the guy said, bring your kids Wednesday. We'll feed them. Go out and have a date. He didn't want any... That church has no room to grow. None. They are surrounded by neighborhood and property. There's no room to build a bigger building. They just really want to evangelize people. The pastor who goes there is not going as like a stepping stone to make $1 million. It's like the kind of guy, though, he's like some old-timey type of guy who would go there, okay? They're just really nice, salt-of-the-earth people. And they really just want your kids on Wednesday night so they can save them whether you go to church or not, okay? And that's not necessarily unique to them. People want the kids. That's why those kids, people are in the kids' ministry. because they're trying to lead kids to Christ and teach them about the Bible, whether the parents are in play or not. And if I'm a guy at church, just like whether it's Joe Pewsitter or an elder, and I have a guy who comes every Sunday, I'm going to tell you, I'm not trying to be pharisaical. Look on the computer, because you got to type in your kids on the computer to check them in to get the sticker. You put my computer check-ins week to week against anybody, and if I'm not there, I'm out of town. If there's a soccer game at 12, I'm there till 11:45. So that's like, I'm everything you want with kids, I'm doing it. All right, and the same thing for, say, Sunday school. All these churches, they don't want you just coming and going to the service. They want to get you connected to a Sunday school class. And I am. So why in the world would you tell somebody like that who's not a physical threat not to come back? So, well, your kids can come back, but you can't. That's really not a healthy family dynamic. I'm going to send my wife and kids and go to church somewhere else. That's stupid. That may happen from time to time, but it's just, that's not a healthy family dynamic. That's not a healthy church dynamic. And I guess the only other reason would be if somebody is just outright attacking the church and criticizing the church, which is not what I've done. Am I critical of a lot of general evangelical church practices? Yes. Does First Baptist engage in some of those practices? Yes, but they're not the first Baptist. There's a million Baptist churches who do that. And what I'm doing on this show and my social media is saying, hey guys, let's rethink some of these things we're doing. They're not good. Now, I haven't gotten into Matthew 18 yet. But in my opinion, what it comes down to is nickels and noses and being aggravated. There's people who don't like me, and they complain to the elders, and the elders say, you know what, I'm tired of complaints about this guy. He's not a member. He's not a donator. It's time for him to go. I remember in seminary, we were in my worship leadership class, and the class was taught half by a preacher and half by a music guy, and it was all about how to run your church and plan your worship services. And the preacher guy, his name's Dr. Miller, the church at the time was First Baptist Kenner, Louisiana. And listen, Louisiana is a dark place as far as a Christian witness goes. By the way, I'm right by Cross Point City Church right now because I'm pulling into the school. Louisiana is a really dark place as far as a Christian witness. It's mostly Roman Catholic. That's why they put a seminary there. By the way, that's why they put a seminary in San Francisco. I think I'm in the, am I in the wrong lane? I'm picking up my kids from volleyball camp. But it's a really dark place. And they're happy just to have people come to church there. And Dr. Miller said, there is a homosexual couple that comes to our church. Obviously, they can't be members. They'd have to repent of their homosexuality. But they want them coming to church and hearing the gospel and hearing the word proclaimed. Like, I don't know why a gay couple would come to church. Two dudes come to, like, why aren't you going to the liberal Presbyterian church or the Anglican church where they're okay with that? Like, why would you come to the Baptist church? Probably because the preaching's better. But why? Maybe for some sense of normalcy. I don't know, but unless those guys are holding hands and canoodling back there, they're not going to throw them out. So, speaking of somebody with a hopeful, evangelistic mindset, if there was somebody who chose to come to my church and put his kids in the kids' Sunday school, if he wasn't causing disruptions and physical violence and threats of violence, there's absolutely no way I would tell that person not to come back, especially if he'd been doing it for 5 years. That's just, dare I say, ungodly. But from my perspective, when you're a guest, you don't want to be a bad guest. One of the worst things you can be is a bad guest. Because the Bible really comes from a culture of hospitality, and there's a lot of implications that you should be hospitable, but you're supposed to be hospitable. To be a Christian is to be hospitable, and some people even have this person has the gift of hospitality or something, all right? But there's another hand to that. You want to be a good guest. And for me, being a good guest is, I'm not going to go to you. I'm not going to talk to you about the Sunday school teacher you have who doesn't even believe in the general resurrection. I'm not going to make a stink about it. I'm not going to make a stink about the elder's wife who's a woman that teaches Sunday school class. I'm really not going to go to your music minister and make a stink that he's singing Elevation and the worst, most evil music around. Because like I said, when I started coming here, your problems are your problems. And there's going to be things that aren't sinful or unbiblical that I just think are silly. Like one time, I didn't say anything about it in Sunday school. My wife did. And I was like, why are you criticizing them? They put a ball pit in the lobby. And every time you invited somebody to church or witnessed to them, you put a white ball in the ball pit. And every time they got saved or came, you put a red ball in the ball pit. And I'm like, why do we have a ball pit in the lobby? To look at how many people we've... Do I get a gold star next if I get more balls in the ball pit? So there's stuff like that that I just think is silly. But when it comes down to it, listen, you're trying to invite people to church. That's a good thing. And there's stuff that I think is outright unbiblical, like profaning the Lord's worship service or having a church member who's a heretic. And that gets me to Matthew 18. In a church that has 1,000 people, and this doesn't just go for First Baptist, it goes for all these big churches that have 1,000 people in attendance. So I don't know, maybe 500 members and 600 members and 1,000 people in attendance. I asked the other day how many members there were, and I forget what he told me when I asked my Sunday school teacher. It was like 500 or 600. I just don't remember. And I think there's over 1,000 in worship. I think we finally returned to the post-COVID numbers. It was booming before COVID, and then it kind of got wrecked. And I think now it may be back higher. There's a lot of people going to the Discover First class or the little pre-membership class. Anyway, when you have a church that big, number one, you have a bunch of people who regularly come who aren't members. So it's... You get to the idea, how do you apply Matthew 18 to people who aren't members? Because doesn't it only apply to members? And number two, you get the idea, stats come into play. If you have 500 members of your church, or 1,000 members of your church, the odds that somebody is committing some sin that, if not repented of, will necessitate them from being removed from membership are very high. Of 1,000 people, what are the chances you don't have somebody getting divorced or committing adultery or who comes to some heretical belief or who does forsake the gathering together of the saints? I mean, the chances are just high. So you start to ask yourself, what have we done with our members according to Matthew 18? And do we have a consistent standard with what we do to people who are just showing up? And by the way, I know that I'm a lot more present and louder in town than the people who just show up. I see the people who aren't members and just show up. They're just going because, that's the thing to do. That's what you do around here. You go to church, and they're not members, and they don't have any aspirations of joining and volunteering, and they may give a little money, and they may not, but they're not buying billboards. I get it. I know I'm different. I understand. But how do you deal with those people? And you deal with them differently than you do with members of your own church body. And if you want to apply Matthew 18 to a member of a church, and you have to, because only a member of a church can be put under discipline by their own church. Another church can't put a member of another church under discipline. Somebody from First Baptist can't put somebody from Tabernacle under discipline, etc., etc. But if you want to go through Matthew 18, so we got to go to somebody privately and tell them they're sinning. If your church is doing it like this, if somebody goes to the elders and complains about somebody, and then they send an elder to you and say, well, so-and-so is, you're sinning. And you say, well, did you come to me or did somebody send you? Because if that person didn't come to me personally one-on-one, They're the one who noticed it. I think you've drifted from Matthew 18. If you're on an elder board and somebody calls and comes and complains to you about somebody, I think what you need to say is, have you gone to them? You want me to do something about it, but have you gone to them and tried to work this out? And if you can't, come to me and we'll go and we'll establish everything by two or three witnesses, because that's a biblical principle. And if they still won't listen to us, we got to take it before the church. From a Baptist perspective, I think if you're going to ban someone from a campus, from attendance, it needs to be a church-wide understanding. I don't want to say a church-wide decision, because if the church puts the elders in charge and the overseers say, we're going to tell this person not to come, I think that's their prerogative. I think they've got the authority to do that. What they don't have is the authority to put out a church member. It takes the whole church to do that. But I think it's not something you want to like do in secret. But what you don't want to go through like red tape, like, well, we have elders and we think this person's a threat, we have to have a church meeting about it first. Like, no, get a restraining order. Get rid of that person fast. Be safe. Okay? So there's a difference between Matthew 18, church discipline, and just a general overseeing of a church with regards to non-members. And by the way, like, non-members attending churches regularly is like not a thing we encounter in the Bible. It's not a thing we encounter in the Didache, really. It's we have to decide, like, what's the wisest thing to do. And generally speaking, I think in evangelicalism, people, the wisest thing to do is expose them as to much gospel and Christian fellowship as we can. What are you guys' opinion on that? Do you agree with something like that? Like, what would you do in your church? Because this situation could very well happen at your church. For me, just from, like, say, a perspective of consistency and a perspective of fairness, if there's a group of elders who say, we don't want you to come here anymore, all right, it's your prerogative, fine. You don't even owe me an explanation because I'm just a guest. You just have that right. But if you choose to give me an explanation and say, well, you're in sin, well, then I got to say, like, yeah, but you got all these other people in here, like, I know because I live with them and they're my friends. Like, you have all these other people in these disqualifying sins. Disqualifying from what? Fellowship. They need to be restored in a spirit of gentleness. And you haven't done I've never heard of anybody going through the third step of church discipline. And I know there's people who are unrepentant. I just know. I'm not going to sit here and name them and gossip about them on the podcast, but I know they're there. I know who they are. I see them around town and I see them at church. And it's just like, do you think I have any respect for your decision? Or do you think I'm going to sit and say, hold on, let me reconsider what these old wise men are thinking about? No, because they're not living within biblical consistency there. Guys, this is for everybody in America. We have got to have some kind of biblical consistency when it comes down to the holiness of the church. Or just the witness is no good with those people outside of it. Rather, outside the faith or outside of membership. People who are looking to make decisions about what to do with their life. I know I'm in this weird, or have been in this weird situation for 5 years. And again, I want to emphasize, this is not a screed against First Baptist or a complaint about the rank and file pew sitters there. I think your elders didn't do something good. Guys, I think your elders have done things not right for 5 years. You didn't hear me complaining about it and making a stink. And I'm not really trying to make a stink now. If they're right to do it, then do it. Has it put a hardship on me and my household? Well, you should have seen my daughter's face yesterday. And by the way, if I was a member of the church and I was, I don't know, cheating on my taxes and they threw me out for cheating on my taxes, threw me out of membership, and I had to explain that to my daughter, well, they should throw me out of the membership no matter what. There's no justification. Well, this is going to make his kids sad. You do the right thing and the repercussions are the repercussions. Do the right thing and let God handle the consequences. But I really think, like, even with regards to if you were to church discipline someone out of church as a non-member, to tell them, like, don't come back on the property and attend worship service is crazy, because how are they supposed to be reconciled? And, you know, handing them over to Satan is not giving them the right hand of fellowship. It's not letting them vote in church members. It's not letting them take communion. But if they're still willing to take their kids, would your church kick somebody out, Matthew 18, out of membership and tell them don't come back to church ever and just sit through the service? I'm just asking. What has happened, listeners, at your churches? This is just, you know, that's what's going on in my life. Are these the volleyball kids? I don't know. That one's pretty tall. Maybe it's a volleyball kid. I'm going to pull up some. All right. There's going to be a part three about this. And I just want to reiterate, like, man, I'm not blaming people. Most of the time when you get in trouble, you have nobody to blame but yourself. I'm old enough to know that. But I'm just going through and saying, guys, stuff like this happens. This is my situation. I'm not running a screed against people. I'm not trying to say you need to get rid of those elders, blah, blah, blah. I just want to encourage people to be active in knowing what's going on at their church and try to handle things biblically. And I think in part three, what I want to do is tell a story about baptism to juxtapose, like, why I would have a billboard and a whole website telling people not to go to a Cross Point or a church like it versus why I wouldn't do that against what I saw as a legitimate church, even a legitimate church that's not doing things right. Because, guys, we wouldn't have a New Testament if all the churches did things right, right? Like, we constantly need to be correcting ourselves. But there's a point when I think a church or an organization steps out of orthodoxy so far that it ceases to become a biblical church. And it's sort of like when, when Darth Sidious tells Darth Maul, you have become a rival. Like, you're not with me anymore. You're outside. All right, maybe that's a bad example because now I'm Darth Sidious. But I'm going to juxtapose that, because I bet there's people wondering still, like, I would never do this. Why would Seth do this? And you regular listeners know, because I've explained it to you. But what about people who don't listen to this show every day? What about people who don't listen to the Justin Peters and Chris Roseboroughs of the world? There's people just generally ignorant. They don't know that it's bad to play Hillsong at their church. They just don't know. They're just trying to do the right thing. Ultimately, a church is just full of people that you need to love. And a lot of people are just trying to do the right thing and go about their lives. And they don't have the same cares and concerns that I do when it comes to dogma. I know that. They're not as dogmatic as me. Fine. You have gifts and skills that I don't have. And we have to come together and use them for the benefit of the kingdom. So part three, I think I'm going to do something as a juxtaposition. Because I think it's going to make people understand. Because I think there's people... And these people have been around my entire life. This happens. Like, oh, Seth, he's a good guy. You just don't get him. And something like this happens. It's like, oh, man, I've been backing that guy up. And now look at this. Okay? And it's one of those things, like, when you're somebody like me, and you might know somebody like me in real life, there's people that I never know who badmouth me, and there's people that I never know who defend me. Okay? And I want to make... Like I said, I never want to make this show about me. I want to make it about general things. I try very hard to make it about general things. I am not millennial enough to sit around and talk about myself like 1,000 people want to download to hear me talk about myself. But I want those people sort of in the middle of, like, I agree with some of the stuff he does. I don't understand why he did that. And is he attacking a biblical church? I'm not doing this to convince the elders at First Baptist. I'm doing this to convince you, people who think Seth has identified something that needs to change in our town. I don't, let's get behind this. Or at least let's not condemn it. So that's what part three will be, at about a billboard too far. All right, I'm going to see if I can get my kids now. I don't even know if I'm in the right place. Thanks for listening to the Christian Commute. Lord willing, I'll be back with you again tomorrow. As always, God bless. And as always, remember, Christianity is not about getting saved. It's about being saved.